If you've been here the last few weeks, as we have been hearing again Jesus' Sermon on the Mount for several weeks, you've heard from Pastor John and Pastor Emily and myself. We have all said more or less the point that one of the things that St. Matthew's trying to accomplish is to show Jesus as sort of the new Moses, or the fulfillment of Moses, the fulfillment of the law. Matthew's gospel is written in some way to convince his own people, Jews who began following this risen Jesus, that he is, the fulfillment of Moses. Whereas Moses led the people from bondage through the Red Sea, across into the wilderness and the promised land, Matthew writes to tell of Jesus who leads the new Israel through the baptismal waters from bondage to sin to now freedom in his name. Today, we pick up, Jesus took three of the disciples to the top of the mountain. It's the midpoint of Jesus' journey. The clouds start to hang now over his ministry. The Pharisees and the Sadducees are increasingly making it difficult for Jesus. The disciples bicker constantly. And Jesus begins to talk to them about a happy subject. He starts talking to them about suffering. He talked about those who save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will save it, and things like that. So then he takes these three away from the other nine, leads them up the winding path to the top of the mountain. Something happened. Not really sure what occurred, but the disciples later called it a transfiguration, a metamorphosis, a change. We know that Moses and Elijah appeared, although somebody at the early service asked me, how did they recognize that was Moses? I mean, he's been dead for 800 years. And I said, well, clearly they had been to Rome and had seen the statue Michelangelo did. That's how they recognized him. It's a dumb question. All at once, his face shone like the sun. They'd never seen that before. And God, this voice from the cloud, spoke. Same voice, same cloud, same sentence back from Jesus' baptism. This is my beloved Son. And then the vision fades. That's it. Moses and Elijah leave as quickly as they came, and there the three disciples and Jesus make their way down the mountain. Jesus called this a vision. The church scholars would later call it a theophany, a visitation from God, a revelation. And the disciples, those three, would tell over and over again that day, that special day, that important day, when it seemed like God came down and was just revealed. Glorified. This is my beloved Son. And then Jesus comes to the three after that and says, get up. Do not be afraid. This is one of the many stories we hear. When people encounter Jesus, their predominant emotion is not joy. It's not gladness. It's fear. But the people who feel fear are not normally just the crowds and the people that sort of come seeking healing and such from Jesus. The fear is predominantly felt by those closest to him, his own disciples. I mean, when he assists his disciples after a night of fishing failure and they get this miraculous catch of fish, we read, they felt fear. When Jesus calms the wind and the waves and the disciples are there in the back of the boat, it says they felt fear. When the women go out to the tomb that Easter morning, they find the tomb empty, and it says they felt fear. Time and time again, Jesus will say to those closest to him, be not afraid. Well, he wouldn't have to say that had they were not actually afraid, right? There's something about getting near to Jesus that scared them half out of their wits. But of course, I think we need to distinguish between a couple kinds of fear. I don't mean the kind of fear as in part of our frail and vulnerable circumstances, part of the human condition, fear of death, fear of troubled times, fear of hunger, right? Some real concrete things. But this is a kind of awe fear thing that you would get in encountering God when you see a vision of God. I mean, we often say we want God to speak to us, want God to hear our prayers. Wouldn't it be even great if God could sort of prove there really is a God, some sort of see something real, some presence, something? And yet those who do say they're afraid. A particular kind of holy fear. There on the mountain in this weird thing that went on, and the mystical cloud and the shining face and the voice from heaven, and it all spells fear. But still, why were they afraid? Maybe because right before the trip up the mountain, Jesus starts talking not only about suffering, but he talks about his death. He straightforwardly tells his disciples, you know, I'm going to Jerusalem, I'm going to suffer, and I'm going to die. And when Peter says, well, that's impossible, that can't happen to you, you're God's chosen, God's anointed, Jesus tells Peter in the crowds, if you want to follow where I go, if you wish to go where I go, you must take up your cross. You must follow the path that I am on. Now, maybe that's why they felt fear. Not any old fear, but the fear of following that path, that journey, a path of suffering and a path of death. I mean, when we see the incarnate God come face to face with God in the flesh, when we see the particular kinds of demands placed upon us closest to him, his followers, when we see more clearly the path he's on and the way in which he beckons, then we feel afraid. Again, the New Testament bears witness to those who encountered the one risen from the dead. It was deeply moving. It was, in some way, threateningly fearful. But for all of them, it was also life-transforming. And so it may be the case that Jesus is not only revealing himself to the disciples on the mountain, but again, he's inviting us to follow that path. And so I've always sort of wondered if the Transfiguration is some sort of parable for what we do here on Sundays. We gather together. Maybe, you know, we just want to be with Jesus and Jesus' followers. Maybe we think of Jesus as a teacher and we can learn something, a moral example that we can follow. And that's okay. And in truth, at this point in the story, that might be just about all the disciples have managed. That may be as far as they're willing to go. I mean, and yet, sometimes Christ leads us beyond ourselves, beyond our answers. He takes our hand and leads us up. He shines before us in mysterious ways, mysterious and wonderful. We cannot understand, we cannot comprehend. And maybe that's about as good as it gets. And we, like Peter, cry out, Lord, it's good to be here. Up on the mountain, everything changes. The disciples' solitude is sort of broken into by two people everybody thought was dead. These two great figures of the faith, Moses and Elijah. The vision, it's stunning, it's weird. We're here on Sunday, sometimes called the eighth day. And again, we can sort of take this as Christian experience, perhaps as good as it gets. Maybe we take this for an encounter we want when we come here, to talk to the dead, to see God face to face, to see what the future looks like, to see a vision, to behold a promise, and the response, "This is my beloved." For one brief moment, Peter, James, and John got to see something clearly, see who Jesus is. But in some sort of odd way, the disciples themselves are sort of transfigured, sort of changed, because it changed everything from here on out. They began to see then the path that they must walk, to go where he has led the way. Wednesday begins for us Lent. Begins with ashes, begins with confession. But it'll only be about 50 days later. We will gather here and hear again and again the story of Jesus' arrest, his betrayal, his suffering and his death on a cross. It's the same one for a brief moment on a mountain shines the glory of God. That's the same one rejected and cut off. The same one who invites us to walk the path where he has led the way. And though the way be drear and dark, we believe it leads to resurrection, everlasting life, newness of life, life in his name, more life than we can even imagine. And for one brief moment, we see the vision in front of our eyes. Thanks be to God. Amen.